Good morning. Good morning. Beautiful day out there. I hope you're able to enjoy it. It's 10:07. Good morning. Good morning. Okay. We've been talking a lot about a motion tonight by Brian Gomes, Councilor Gomes, to be taken up by the New Bedford City Council, where he asks that his councilors support sending a certified letter to the Office of the Inspector General of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, requesting that they conduct a forensic audit of the financial situation in the city of New Bedford that resulted in a reported surpluses turning into substantial deficits in the city's financial structure over a very short period of time. So he would like to invite the Inspector General into the city to examine the financial situation. And I wonder if he'll get support from his colleagues. Because remember, they're not spectators here. They've been voting on the mayor's budget. The mayor produces the budget. They can only cut from the budget. They've been at this. Well, Brian's been at it for a long, long time, longer than anybody else in the city of New Bedford, longer than the mayor. But his colleagues, some of them have got 10 years on the council. But there's a lot of new ones as well, relatively new ones. James Roy is brand new, came in with Scott Pemberton, brand new. Sean Oliver came in a little bit before them, a couple years earlier, but during a special election. So they're not spectators. They've been voting on these budgets and voting on COLA increases and health insurance. They've been voting on all those are substantial parts of the budget. So do they, and I bet you most of them are going to say, yeah, I'm all for it. I'd love to have a third set of eyes. We've got the 11 on the council. We got the mayor's team. Why not bring in the inspector general? But we're going to find out tonight how many votes Councilor Gomes will wrangle for this motion. Okay. 508-996-0500. That's how you can get on the air. It's open phones. If you want to participate in the program, happy to have you. Good morning. Thanks for holding.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hello?
Yes, sir. You're on there.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Oh, not bad. First time caller.
Okay.
Chris, I am a retired New Bedford firefighter. I have been hearing different people calling about our premiums on our insurance. Mm-hmm. A gentleman just called you and was thinking that we paid $200 a month or some crazy figure like that.
Well, he was speculating.
But I'll give you
yeah.
the exact,
please.
I'll give you the exact figures.
Please.
How's that?
Yes, sir. That'd be great.
Per month. Now, I was on their Blue Cross Blue Shield until just 3 months ago, March 1st. Then I went to Medicare.
Okay.
Anyway, my deductions for all family were $718 and change per month. Now, if you wanted to add the dental plan, that was another $100 and change. So well in excess of $800 something a month.
Yes.
But again, for the all family plan, it's currently $718 and change a month, unless they've increased that since March 1st, 3 months ago, which I doubt they have.
Yes.
So I just wanted to make, you know, I'm not saying that it's the worst or that maybe we couldn't, you know, we couldn't figure something out for a little bit more. But we are certainly not paying $200 a month. I'm assuming that's what he meant was $200 a month, Chris.
So I think he was just putting that out there as a speculation. And your numbers, which I don't doubt because they jive with someone else who texted me off the air that said the city charges $718.92 per month for a family plan to retirees. So those numbers you
there
gave
you
me
go.
Are 100% correct.
Yes, there you go. I just wanted people to realize that, boy, that would be about 200 a month. That'd be about $50 a week.
Right.
That may have been happening back in 1983 or so, but certainly not now, Chris.
I appreciate that, my friend. And don't be a stranger. An important phone call. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, my friend. Thanks for your service as a firefighter. So, I had gotten that number during the break. The number he just called in and gave us. The retirees, city retirees, pay for health insurance a month, if they're on the family plan, $718.92 per month for a family plan. If they have an individual plan, it's $318.26 for an individual plan. And obviously, as the gentleman points out, that does not include dental, which would be an additional $100 a month, I think, for the family plan. I'm not sure on the individual. But so it could put you up over $800 if you have the dental plan as well. So 508-996-0. Again, I really appreciate that gentleman calling in and the person texting me in as well, the information, because it makes the discussion flow a little easier, doesn't it? 508-996-0500. Should the inspector general come into the city of New Bedford, look at the finances? It's a request to his colleagues by Brian Gomes tonight on the city council floor. Good morning. Thanks for holding.
Hey, Chris. How you doing?
Good. How are you, my friend?
I say yes. Have the inspector general line by line and look at all the numbers, make sure there's no cooking of the books, money going back and forth without our knowing. Because the city council is going to vote on basically what the CFO prints out and his team, and then they're going to scrutinize that. And beyond that, we have no idea. You know, you just finished saying that back in December of 2025, we had $13 million surplus.
Yes.
And according to the Mass Municipal Association, the city of New Bedford budget in 2024 was $513. And then in 2025, it was $536 million. In 2026, $561 million. Now for 2027, we got to make cuts to go to $535 million. You see where I'm going with this?
Yes.
All of this up and down, up and down. We need to know exactly what we're looking at. Make sure that Bob Ekstrom is giving us the straight scoop.
So you want to see the inspector general come in?
Oh, absolutely. If the mayor has nothing to hide, come in. Go through every file, every department, line by line, and see if the numbers add up. And then we really know what we're looking at. I know New Bedford Light put out something regarding the anatomy of the city budget.
Yes.
I mean, they're looking at health care cost for the coming year, an increase of $4 million. Pensions, $3 million. And so on and so forth and so on. I mean, you'd have to go read it, but that's my thing. I say, yeah, go ahead. Outside auditor, look through the books, make sure there's, no cooking of the books going on or money's going from one department to another that we're not aware of. That's all. I don't think it's irrational.
No, I don't either. But it is controversial in the sense that they can come in and subpoena documents, put people under oath. It could be a real investigation, and it'll include the city council. My thoughts are, wouldn't it be ironic if the city council votes for this? I don't see how they couldn't, but if they did vote for this, and then the inspector general comes in and his report also puts them at fault. That'd be kind of interesting,
well,
right?
Well, maybe they're not spectators. Both parties at fault.
Yes.
We're talking about $32 million.
Yes.
First it was $8 million. Then it was $10 million. Then it's $18 million. Now it's $32 million. We as taxpayers, and even the businesses of the city, we all need to know what the hell's going on here. We want to make sure that we're getting the straight scoop. And I think we're entitled to that as taxpayers.
No, I agree with you. Thanks for the call. 508-996-0500. Let me tell you something. It puts the city at a certain disadvantage for property buyers. In other words, if you have capital out there and you're looking to buy a home, looking to buy a business or open a business, if you do it in the city of New Bedford, where you're required to, even if it's a triple net lease, you're required to cover the property taxes. And you see that because of past decisions, going back decades, really, you're going to be on the hook for all these pension costs, the health care costs. Why would you want to locate in the city of New Bedford? And I'm sure that has had a, besides the governor's policies, I'm sure that's had a significant impact on economic development in the city of New Bedford. If you want to, if you live in New Bedford, you live anywhere in the region, and you decided you've had enough and you want to get out of town, but the last thing you want is for your car to break down. So get your car to Mack Auto Sales, a family-owned business that can help you operate an automobile to get out of town, the get-out-of-town package. Mack Auto Sales is located on Rivet Street in the city of New Bedford. This family-owned business repairs all makes and models of automobiles, including the one you're driving right now. Need to get your car ready for the coming hot weather, and I'm sure you do. Call and make an appointment today at Mack Auto Sales and Repair. Call them at 508-565-6221. They're open weekdays 9 to 5 for the convenience of you and your family. You're driving a foreign car? Perfect. Mack Auto Sales specializes in servicing foreign-made automobiles. They do a beautiful job with American-made automobiles as well. Mention WBSM. They'll give you a nice break on the repair bill. They service all the vehicles here between Fun 107 and WBSM. Ask about their aftermarket accessories and their quality used cars for sale at Mack Auto Sales. We're going to be right back. Stick around. If you're on hold, stay there. We'll be right back.
Back to Chris McCarthy and South Coast Now on WBSM. Call 508-996-0500.
Check out Guitar George. He knows all the chords. But it's strictly rhythm. He doesn't want to make it cry or sing. If an old guitar is all he can afford, when he gets up under the lights, play his bass.
Welcome back to the program. I'm Chris McCarthy, you're the audience, and I hope you're enjoying the beautiful day we're having here in the greater Fairhaven area. Beautiful day. So, gentlemen brought up the New Bedford Light. I love the New Bedford Light. I think they do a great job covering the area. And, one of the best things they cover is illegal aliens. They don't call them that, but certainly we do. And we know what they're talking about when they say immigration. They're talking about mostly illegal immigration. Illegal immigration. And they have a really interesting story today about the Capitol Theater. The Capitol Theater, it's a very controversial taxpayer-funded program, project, by a nonprofit, the Center for Economic Development and Socialism, or something like that. And they are hell-bent on helping the invaders, okay? You know that, and I know that. They're a nonprofit. And they're very dedicated to their mission. And they don't ever, and this is to be admired, they don't ever waver from their mission. Under the leadership of Corinne Williams. And they've been building the Capitol Theater for decades now. They've been working on this project. You ever see the movie Money Pit? Tom Hanks and Shelley Long, Money Pit. Imagine Money Pit. You saw The Big Dig. Maybe that's a better one. The Big Dig. Now, it's in proportion, but The Big Dig was all taxpayer money. And boy, a lot of people did really well off of that project. Now, the Capitol Theater, right there on Acushnet Avenue, looks to me like a city block, but it's not. But it looks that way. I remember when Shenanigans was there. There were other places there as well. It is right on Acushnet Avenue. It hasn't changed. The appearance on the outside hasn't changed since the 90s, maybe the 2000s. But the city of New Bedford taxpayers paid for that building for Karun Williams nonprofit. The city of New Bedford allocated one of the first tranches of money that came out of the community development money, the CIP, right? The little extra tax that you pay on your property taxes in New Bedford. You voted for it by referendum at the ballot to increase your own property taxes. We do it in Fairhaven. Then that money is put into a pot of money to be used for community improvement projects. Stuff that otherwise wouldn't get a ballot line or a budget line, rather, a budget line in the city of New Bedford or in the town of Fairhaven, as an example. So, various projects fail out applications for money from the taxpayers because it's a surplus tax on property that gets a diminishing match from the state government. That's how it was sold to most communities. Is it's money that state taxpayers will match local taxpayers for important local projects to benefit the community. And those words are all in the eyes of the decision makers, right? What is the community? What really benefits? What are the values? All that stuff are set by appointed and elected officials. So, to start out, Karun Williams' nonprofit group, which really is involved in helping migrants make Massachusetts their home. That's what their mission is. So, they appealed to the Mitchell administration, which is the first administration to have these surplus property tax funds to give out to community organizations, for around $350,000. And I'm doing this from memory. So there might be a detailer here that I get off, that I get incorrect. But basically, the first tranche of funding for Karun Williams' nonprofit to obtain a building on Acushnet Avenue was about $300,000 that you, the taxpayers, gave them through the appointees of Mayor Mitchell. That was $300,000 to this nonprofit so they could obtain this building, which previously was on the rolls as a tax-paying property owned by a private individual. Now it's in the hands of a nonprofit. Since that original $300,000 that the nonprofit got from you, the taxpayers, which was approved by the city council, okay? It was approved by the city council. Interestingly, at a time that Corinne Williams was also serving on the Workforce Development Board, which employed Joe Lopes and Consula Baptiste at various times, including when they voted for the money. That's interesting, right? So then, over the course of years, Corinne Williams' nonprofit, doing the Capitol Theater Project, got over $1 million from you, the property taxpayers of the city of New Bedford. Voted by appointees of the mayor, ratified by the city council, led by Maria Fiesta, having a party on the taxpayers' dime. At a time when Maria Fiesta, who's gone but not forgotten, was not going to city council meetings for her own reasons, she does show up in the minutes as attending these meetings that were evaluating and voting on the projects. Although she wasn't a member of the committee, she was there to lend her significant weight to the decision of the mayor's appointees in the favor of this nonprofit that had obtained, using taxpayers' dollars, the Capitol Theater on Acushnet Avenue. You've paid over $1 million, but that's not all. They've gotten significant state grants with the help of Tony Cabral. It's all a matter of public record. You can read the application. But also, ARPA money, $1.6 million was allocated for the Capitol Theater Project, although not all has been distributed, by John Mitchell. And there's a letter he signed congratulating Corinne Williams, who, by the way, also served on the advisory board for the mayor for ARPA funds. All is a matter of public record. So the New Bedford Light is trying to breathe new life into this project. They've done an advertisement, and it's really interesting. There's an article, and I'm going to play it here in a moment, from the Capitol Theater in the New Bedford Light, an article, possibly an advertisement, for 6 apartments that might be available someday in the future. Now, here's the thing. They've been working on this project for years. Millions of dollars from your tax dollars have been poured into this fiasco. Take a drive by on Acushnet Avenue, Capitol Theater, the old shenanigans. It's all shenanigans, really, in my opinion. You can read all about it. The city council gave them, up until a few years ago, when Sean Oliver said no and Leo Choquette said no. Now, the mayor's appointees over these funds have rejected the Capitol Theater year after year. After giving them millions of dollars, they are now trying to, we've done articles here, you can read them at Fun107 and WBSM.com. Michael Rock's written about it. Barry Richard has written about it. I've kept you up to date on it. Certainly I've kept the city council up to date on it. It is amazing to me. Somebody tonight on the city council might want to amend Councilor Gomes' motion to invite the inspector general to examine the city books, to examine the Capitol Theater under Corinne Williams' leadership, the acquisition of this building, where all the money is gone. Because when you drive by it, doesn't look changed to me. Doesn't mean they haven't made changes. But, boy, I tell you, from my opinion and my following of the finances, of the news articles, I don't know what the money went to, but I know it was your money and mine that went into it. All right. So if you're on hold, you can stay there, but I got to play this little article so you understand what I'm talking about here at the Capitol Theater. This is newbedfordlight.org.
CEDC to open waitlist for 6 affordable apartments at the Capitol Theater. By Gerardo Beltran Salinas. Lee en Español. The Capitol Theater was a cultural landmark in New Bedford's North End for much of the 20th century. Inaugurated on November 29, 1920, it was also a vibrant gathering place for a community that revolved around cinema. After closing as a movie theater in the 1960s, the building became a rock concert venue in the 1970s. Before falling into progressive disrepair, it housed businesses with precarious installations, while water leaks rotted its ornate and artistic ceiling finishes and porticos. The theater closed for good around 1980. Approximately 5 years ago, leaders at the Community Economic Development Center, CEDC, decided to take over the property and undertake an ambitious renovation project that honors the theater's cultural and architectural heritage. The plan includes the development of 6 rental apartments on the second floor, with 1- and 2-bedroom units, available through a waitlist that will be managed at the CEDC offices. The first floor will house the CEDC offices, a small clinic affiliated with New Bedford Community Health Center, a branch of South Coast Federal Credit Union, and an immigration legal assistance office, among other community services. CEDC Executive Director Corin Williams said the project has cost approximately $4 million to date, and that they expect to receive additional funding from the state and other institutions given the building's historic value. The Capitol has financing through historic tax credits, and both the federal and state governments have provided funds to allow us to complete construction and have the building ready, Williams explained. With asbestos cleanup now complete, the building is currently in the window installation and historic brick restoration phase. Everything is expected to be ready and open to the public by late 2027 or early 2028. Those interested in the apartments can visit the CEDC at 2.
Okay, so you can read the rest of that article. I have the robot read it to you at newbedfordlight.org. Do you guys understand? There are millions of dollars that have been poured into that building that no private developer would have bought. And I don't know what the CEDC's experience was in redoing buildings. I don't know why the city of New Bedford allocated money to them to do it. I don't know what their qualifications were, but you've poured millions of dollars into that. And you would have continued to pour millions more. So now they're saying it'll be ready maybe the end of next year or the year after that. I mean, it is total boondoggle. They've been pushing off the completion date. Every year is going to be that year. And they push it off. They push it off. Michael Rock has written favorable pieces on it. They're available at Fund 107 that give a different completion date. Barry Richard did a tour of the place, wrote an article for WBSM.com that gives a different completion date. I've read through the documents that they provided to the city of New Bedford that give different completion dates. And it wasn't until this program began talking about it, now years ago, I think before I got sick, I was first talking about this. But all along, Maria Fiesta, having a party on the taxpayer's dime, was funding this, forcing a vote. Part of the problem, my understanding, that Leo Choquette ran into when he first got on the city council, and that Sean Oliver ran into, although they ran right over it, with Maria Giesta having a party on the taxpayer's dime, was because they opposed this boondoggle, total boondoggle. And we memorialized their comments here on the city council floor during the budget discussion. No, during the community investment program that they have to sign off on. The mayor's appointees read the applications, but they have to forward it to the city council to allocate the money. And over $1 million until Leo Choquette and Sean Oliver started voting no. Now the mayor's appointees don't even put Capitol Theater proposals forward, although they're still trying, as you heard from that article. They're still trying to get taxpayers' money. Here we go. A walk down memory lane with Sean Oliver, now a candidate for lieutenant governor in the Republican Party. Talking about the Capitol Theater.
Who have grown. I know that costs have increased, and we hear about the continuation of, you know, what COVID has done. I know that it impacted this project, but I believe the project that was initially somewhere around last year, I think it was $7.3 million, and now we're at $11.3 million. So that's like a $4 million increase. Is that correct?
I'd have to go back and look at last year's application, but I'm not surprised by the increase in costs. Everything has gone up. The unexpected asbestos discovery was a problem. The fact that the roof was, and I'm providing you all, this is the for those new counselors, the awardees are required to report quarterly to the CPC what their status of the project is. So this is from their latest quarterly report. Because of the fact that they weren't able to move as quickly as they wanted to on the roof, there was additional damage because it was left out into the elements. So I'm not surprised. I'd have to go back, honestly, counselor, to look back at last year's budget. But I'm not surprised that there would be an increase.
Okay. I'm pretty positive that it was about a little over 7 million last year and now it's 11. So almost a 50% increase. Not that this isn't a worthy project, that housing and redevelopment of our old buildings and is definitely, you know, New Bedford's not getting any bigger, so we have to work within the confines of what we have. I just don't, you know, we're going over, you know, over $1.5 million in ARPA funds, $1 million in CPA funds, and it seems like we're still at kind of like square one on this project.
Correct, counsel.
That's all I have right now. Madam Chair, I'll let some of my colleagues speak.
So that was Sean Oliver a number of years ago when he first came on the council asking questions that none of the councilors before him had ever asked. In fact, they were cheerleading as they dumped more and more of your money into this project. I mean, I'm laughing, but I shouldn't be. I mean, and here they are still looking for more money. The CEDC, Corinne Williams Group, money that could have gone to other things. Because remember, the money that is not given to Corinne Williams and the CEDC can be used by other nonprofits and government organizations to fund very worthy projects that are actually getting completed. Now, Leo Choquette gets in on this. Remember, this is his first vote ever on the Capitol Theater, his first opportunity to ever talk to the mayor's appointees about the Capitol Theater project. This is years ago now, but we memorialized it here on the program because I knew it was very important. And this is your tax dollars and state and federal money as well. Here's Ward 1 City Councilor Leo Choquette.
Chair recognizes Councilor Choquette.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Hi, good evening, Jan, and good evening, Jessica.
Good evening.
So I'm the newest guy here, and this kind of fell into my lap, and I was looking at the numbers, and I mean, $11 million for six low-income apartments and a storefront and a CEDC clubhouse, it seems like a kind of an awful lot of money there. So my question here is, you know, what specific advancements have been made with the initial monies that have been given? Because it looks the same to me. I drive by there all the time, you know, coming back from downtown after we have meetings at City Hall. And I guess I would like your opinion on, like, what stage is this project actually in on a scale of 1 to 10, with, like, 1 being, you know, they haven't even broken ground and 10 being completed? And thank you.
I'll
start answering. First, I do want to say that I know the price tags seem very high, but historic preservation is some of the most expensive projects to do, like even 117 Union
These
Street.
These are city employees defending this project because they allocate
Union
the money.
Street, that's apartments. That's $17 million. It's just expensive to build or to rehab currently used property. I mean,
how many units is the one going in for $17 million? Do you know?
That one's a lot more. It's 40-something units. So it's
40 for 17 and
but it still
11
has a lot
for
of
6. Well,
it has a lot of commercial space, and I would say with the CEDC, they are leveraging funding from other places. Like they've gotten money from the Massachusetts Department of Housing and Community Development, plus ARPA funding, plus probably some CDBG funding, plus have they gotten historic tax credits?
Brownfields historic tax credits, underutilized properties, Mass and federal historic. TDI district money, collaborative workspace money, CPA money, ARPA money. They also are going to hold their own mortgage. And it is a 21,000 square foot building that they are rehab.
Okay. So that is Leo Choquette a couple of years ago and Sean Oliver from the city council questioning city employees on the funding for the Capitol Theater, which the New Bedford Light has a big article about today. You can read more about it. We're now... We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back. We'll be joined by Paul Craney from the Mass Fiscal Alliance. Paul Craney coming up next to Graham.
This portion of programming on WBSM brought to you by South Coast Health. Advanced medicine, more care. Back to Chris McCarthy and South Coast Now on WBSM. Call 508-996-0500.
This hour is brought to you by the cold beer and the world's best chicken wings at Rose Alley Ale House in downtown New Bedford. Beautiful day to sit on the deck at Rose Alley. Was now joined by Paul Craney. Paul, of course, the executive director of the Massachusetts Fiscal Alliance, your lobbyist as a taxpayer up on Beacon Hill. Good morning, Paul. Thanks for joining me.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Chris. Slight edit to that. We're not a we don't lobby the legislature directly.
Okay.
Instead, we ask the voters, the constituents, to have their voice heard. So
we want
your audience to be the ones that contacts their elected officials so they hear directly from the people that vote for them in their districts. That's what we try to do at Mass Fiscal Alliance.
Paul Craney, of course, these guys are the guardian of Proposition 2.5, enacted by you and me, the voters, way back when, even before we were voting in 1980. Why is Proposition 2.5 so important for property owners and car owners?
Well, yeah, it's Prop 2.5. A lot of people know what it is. Some people don't. It was passed in 1980 by the voters of Massachusetts. It's one of the best pro-taxpayer property laws in the nation. It basically keeps the growth of property taxes in check. The levy limit, that's a town, like a pool of taxpayers, it can't go higher than 2.5% for property taxes. If it does, the voters in those in the town that is looking at projects, what we call overrides, would have to vote on it. So if a town wants a new building, a new school, a new police station, a new fire station, what have you, kind of, these projects that people see, they oftentimes need override votes because property taxes will go higher than 2.5% for the levy limit. And that allows the voters of those towns to have the final say in the direction of the town. But what the end result has shown that after 46 years, property tax growth has gone down. Leading up to Prop 2.5 passing in 1980, Massachusetts property taxes were well above the national average, I think close to almost 300% above the national average, quite high. And now basically what we're starting to see is that Massachusetts property taxes, although still very high, are not growing at such a growth as other states. So we're starting to, basically bring it down to a level that's in control for a lot of property tax owners. So it is one of the best property tax laws in the nation. It also brings down the vehicle excise tax. It used to be at 6%. Prop 2.5 brought it down to 2.5%. That's the tax that we pay after we purchase a car and just the luxury of owning a vehicle in Massachusetts. You have to pay that tax once a year. You know, that's in addition to your payroll tax and the sales tax that you have to pay taxes on, you know, before you can, you know, as you're buying a vehicle. But the vehicle excise tax is a very special tax in Massachusetts, just for the luxury of having a vehicle in Mass. So that brought down that tax rate to 2.5% from 6%.
Mass Fiscal Alliance is always doing great things, and including you and me in them, if you'd like to be. How do people get more information about Mass Fiscal? How do they get involved in your citizen lobbying campaigns?
Yeah, if you check out massfiscal.org, M-A-S-S-Fiscal.org. You can check out our website. You can do a call to action. That's how you have your voice heard by your elected officials. You can do it through our website. We'll send an email to your state rep, your state senator, the governor, lieutenant governor, on issues that are important to the taxpayers. It takes you a couple minutes, maybe even less, to send that email. You put in your information and the email is sent, and you get a copy of it, and hopefully your elected official responds to you and acknowledges that, you know, your voice was heard. We're also on social media. We do a lot of videos, yes, a lot of posts. We're on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, X, which is the old Twitter, and even LinkedIn. So check out, you know, any platform that you can think of for social media. We're putting a lot of posts, a lot of videos, and you can follow our work and be informed and educated through our social media pages.
We're speaking with Paul Craney, Executive Director of Massachusetts Fiscal Alliance. They've been doing a lot of work with these videos on the Old Colony vote, which is now the Old Colony redo vote, to override Prop 2.5 to build a new Old Colony. Can you talk about that, Paul?
Yeah, this one is really quite perplexing, Chris. I mean, this is a vote that happened last year. And let me just start off and say, you know, we're not against schools for kids or VOTEC schools for kids. No one really is. I mean, that's not really what we're talking about here. We're talking about a very specific project and the taxpayers' interest with this project. So if you look at this project, they're estimating it's going to cost just under $300 million. That's a lot of money, $300 million, just under that. And the voters, end of last year, were asked about this project, and they resoundingly rejected it. 62% said no, 38% said yes. And the project itself, in addition to the high price tag, has a lot of the kind of the most, has all the bells and whistles of some of these projects you see around the state. It has geothermal, it has heat pumps, it has solar. They talk about fighting climate change with this school project. And while you may support some of those alternative energy sources, they come at a very high price tag. You're adding additional costs, and you're asking the taxpayers in those towns to foot that bill. So for a lot of people, they could be very sympathetic. They want to see good schools for their kids, but they may not want to see the most state-of-the-art facility, and they believe that you can still get a state-of-the-art education, but perhaps with more of a fiscally responsible project. But the proponents of this project are coming right back at the voters, and in June, they're going to ask for a revote, even though that they were defeated 38% to 62%. Now, what I would say for taxpayers is, you know, you're sending messages to these people that are pushing these projects. And ultimately, what may end up happening down the road, and we've seen this in other parts of the state, is they start off with the most expensive project. They're trying to get that through. But once they hear from the voters, then they come back later on. They come back with a more reasonable proposal, one that's more in line with what the taxpayers' interests are in the towns. And that's sometimes what has to happen, is that, you know, the voters need to be heard several times before the proponents for these projects understand, you know, it's a lot of this has to do with cost. They support the kids. They support education. They support the school in theory, but they just don't want to pay for all the bells and whistles. They don't want to pay for the geothermal. They don't want to pay for the heat pumps, the solar panels. They don't want to pay for fighting climate change, quote, right, fighting climate change in a school building project, because it's a lot of money to add to property tax bills for these residents in these towns. You know, you got the project itself, and then you have the sustaining funding for a larger project. And these are questions that the taxpayers in those towns are going to have to look at and weigh. And it's not just these towns. This happens everywhere in the state. People, when they're asked about these projects, they weigh the pros and cons. They weigh the benefit to the cost. The benefit is a state-of-the-art school. The cost is, you know, nearly $300 million just for the construction project, then a larger operating budget in the future. And what does that mean for your property taxes? You know, I've heard estimates $500 to $1,000. That's what I'm hearing. I don't know how accurate that is, but, you know, that's that's in the stratosphere of a lot of money.
So you know, I know this that isn't a like friend of mine who lives in Rochester figures his tax bill, knows from the calculator, would go up $900 annually for this project.
And that, I don't think, covers the operating costs of a larger school with larger staff and larger students. And again, my point in that is you can say it's $900, $800, $1,000. My point in all this is that that's a lot of money. You're not talking about 50 extra dollars in your property tax bill, right? You're not talking about, you know, a night out to dinner once a year. This is significant money. If you look at the course of like a 30-year mortgage or, you know, a lifetime of living in that district.
Right.
So it is serious money, and that's what I'm talking about with the specific project. Sometimes voters' voice need to be heard clearly and consistently before their proponents make adjustments. Now,
Paul, I appreciate your time. We're up against a hard break. How do people get involved with Mass Fiscal Alliance?
Check out massfiscal.org, and make sure if you live in those towns, go out to vote next month.
Thank you so much, Paul. We'll get more with Paul as the vote comes closer. Stick around. We'll be right back.